Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Happy anniversary.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. This is Jim Behnke and the June 19th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. And ladies and gentlemen, you may believe it, you may not believe it, I don't know, but today's program does mark the first anniversary of Space Talk. 1 year ago today, we started this little program, and today we're celebrating this birthday with three very special guests joining me in the studio today to talk about the space program, past, present, and future. Wes Olszewski, Patrick McCarthy, Brian Mazdell are names you may recognize if you're a regular listener. Both Wes and Pat have been on the program before, and we've certainly mentioned Brian a few times over the last few weeks. And while they each have their own standing within the space community, the thing that they have in common with me is that we all graduated from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, and we all served together on the Avion student newspaper. And so I thought it'd be fun to get the guys together and talk space, and it should be a very good program, and who knows where it's going to go. But before we get to our guests, I do want to take a moment right away and say thanks to everyone at WMMB who have helped make this show happen, not only in the first place, but who continue to support the program from week to week, especially the operations director here, Ken Holliday, and certainly program director Bill Mick. If, you know, it was a year ago that we started this. If you wondered how the program ever came about, remind you that, you know, I've had a long and wonderful association with this radio station, going back to the time of Larry Brewer. And when WMMB was the nostalgic music format. And through the years, it just kind of happened that I became their go-to guy for space stuff. Sometimes people would call in with a question. People wonder what launched yesterday. People wonder what's going on with the shuttle. And inevitably, they'd get me on the air to answer the question. In fact, in the early days, before the internet and before tweeting and instant messaging and all that, whenever Larry wanted to have me call in for whatever reason, he would play the theme song from Destination Moon, and that would be my cue. It's like the bat signal to call in, and I would do that. So that relationship continued for a long time, and continued through all the different changes at the station. When Bill Mick returned to WMMB for the second time, he made a very firm, specific commitment to me. And to the station to make it more supportive of our space program, to include live launch coverage whenever possible, trying to have me on the air more and more to talk about what's going on. And it was just a little bit more than a year ago that Bill called and wondered if we could put together a weekly show about the space program. And it'd be a one-hour show on the weekend. And sure enough, the pieces fell in place, and Space Talk was the result. And again, 1 year ago, we began the program. So again, thanks to Ken and Bill. Thanks to the board operators who've helped us along the way, George and especially Aaron, who has done the championship, the most of the work here over the last year. Certainly to all the guests we've had on the air, quite a wide range of folks that have been willing to come in on a Saturday or talk to us on the phone or come into the studio. Thanks, of course, to our advertisers who have bought time specifically on Space Talk, and to our major sponsor, United Space Alliance. But especially we thank you, the listeners of Space Talk. We appreciate hearing from you on email. We appreciate your phone calls. We have 1 year in the can now, and we plan to do many more to come. And if you have any suggestions as to what you'd like to hear on this program, feel free to send me a note via email to spacetalking@aol.com. Well, I'm sure the guys I have with me in the studio today would be happy to tell me what I need to do better about my program, and that's what friends are for. So let's introduce them and see if we can't get them to say a few things before our first break here very shortly. As I mentioned before, they are three of my college buddies from Embry-Riddle. We all served on the student newspaper together. We all wound up in careers that have a role in the space program in one way or the other. And I'll introduce them in the order they are sitting in the studio from left to right on your radio dial. Wes Olszewski is the creator of a comic strip about Clyde Morse, the most famous ant in aviation. Wes has worked as a commercial pilot. He's written several books about boats on the Great Lakes and is the genius behind the ant scale series of Dr. Zuch model rockets. Wes, thanks for being here today.
Great to be here, Jim.
Good, good. Well, and glad to have you in studio. You've been on the phone with us. We've been out at the Cape together for the Ares launch attempt, and glad to have you here in the building. Patrick McCarthy is a nationally recognized model rocketeer, among many other claims to fame that you don't even know about, and serves as director of spaceport operations for Space Florida. Plus, he is one of those rare finds, an actual Florida native. Pat, welcome.
Glad to be here, Jim, and congratulations on the first year.
Good, thanks. And finally, Brian Mosdell, director of Florida operations for SpaceX, the company that just successfully launched its Falcon 9 rocket and if I may say so, may have changed the course of our nation's space program in the process. Brian, we're glad to have you on board.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for having me.
Good. Well, okay, now, guys, I don't have any set topics for discussion, don't have any specific lists or anything, but I'm confident that once we get this this ball rolling, we're gonna take it in a lot of different ways, and we do have something planned just after the bottom of the hour that will be a little fun to take advantage of the anniversary. So, Brian, let's start with you because you have been, boy, what has your life been like for the last few weeks and months, in fact, or maybe even a couple of years? You have been in the eye of a hurricane that is no less the heart of the matter of our entire future of our U.S. space program. And you must have been feeling it. You got the Falcon 9 off the ground. What's life been like for you?
Well, it's been very exciting, Jim. And I was fortunate enough to come join SpaceX about 2 years ago when we took over a launch pad that was just level to the ground. And I was fortunate enough to work with the team and lead the team to build up that site, get the launch pad ready for launch, and then successfully put the first Falcon 9 into orbit on June 4th. Along the way, we had visits from President Obama, so I was fortunate enough to meet him personally.
and, of course, what's that like? I mean, whatever you feel about the guy or the politics or the story or whatever, you had the President of the United States show up at the office one day.
It was pretty awesome, and the detail, the security detail that came with him was quite impressive.
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't get anywhere near him, I suppose, unless you could get near him.
Right. Yeah, and I was fortunate enough, he came in and met a group of us, and we walked out to the center of the launch pad. So I found myself walking literally right next to him, side by side.
Did he have any interesting things? I mean, did smart questions, did he show his support? Any interesting conversation?
Oh, yeah. He was very supportive of the program, asked lots of questions about the Falcon 9 and our launch operations. At one point, I had offered to let him come down and press the button. And, unfortunately, he didn't take us up on that.
No. And probably smartly, perhaps, as you want your best guys pushing the buttons out there, I would imagine. And so Falcon 9 launches, and by all accounts, hit the target, hit the bullseye. I know your boss, Elon, was very pleased and had a lot of good things to say. You know, is the pressure off now, or...
Well, the pressure came off for about 36 hours.
Okay.
We've kind of gone from the fire into the frying pan. We have a very aggressive launch manifest, and you need to move out to get the COTS missions successfully executed and then move into our CRS role and start providing cargo up to the station.
And with about 30 seconds, Brian, I mean, did you ever think graduating from Embry-Riddle that, you know, these many years later you'd find yourself in the middle of something so spectacular?
I never thought I'd be at the heart of it. I assumed I'd be off designing wing lugs or something of that nature in Long Beach.
You know, really?
Yeah.
That's great. And instead, you're building launch pads. You had a great experience with the Delta program and doing some other things, and now SpaceX coming by and literally the future of the space program. Well, of course, now that's one piece of the space program. We're going to talk about other pieces when we return in just a moment. We're going to take our first break. So we'll do that, and we'll continue talking with our friends from college on an anniversary edition of Space Talk brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to this one-year anniversary edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. And I didn't mention in the first segment, but I will now, if you'd like to be a part of the celebration and part of what we're talking about here today, ask a question, share an opinion. You are invited and always welcome to give us a call at 321-768-1240 from anywhere in the nation. If you're local here on Florida Space Coast and you're a customer of AT&T Wireless, give us a call by punching in *1240 on your device. Or if you're listening to us on streaming audio at WMMBAM.com right now, live anywhere the internet is, you can certainly send us an email to spacetalking@AOL.com, and we'll see those questions pop up here and get to them as fast as we can. With me in the studio today to celebrate this one-year anniversary of the show, some of my college buddies from those college days gone by, Wes Olszewski, Patrick McCarthy, Brian Mosdell, all are distinguished in their own way for their contributions to our nation's space program. We were talking with Brian about the launch of the Falcon 9 and what it means for the future of our space program, and I want to talk a little bit more about that. Pat, you have your fingers on the pulse of what's going on in the space community, certainly locally. You're involved with a lot of folks through your work at Space Florida. What's been the reaction about this launch, do you think, as you see it, from sort of the outside perspective looking in?
Well, I'd say we're sort of in the middle of it, because obviously it's a politically charged kind of occurrence, because we've got the folks that believe that NASA should be the one and only way of taking people to space. And then we've got the commercial folks that are saying they're the better answer because they can do things less expensive and more efficiently.
Yeah.
But what we're trying to do is match up the people and the workers that we have here. I mean, like you say in your introduction, you know, it's home to the best trained workforce, space workforce in the world. So that's the kind of thing we're trying to apply, make sure that whichever way the Congress and the people of America decide to go, that we'll be able to apply the right folks from the jobs that they have here to the companies that are come in, whether they're providing government contracts or whether they're doing it for commercial operators.
Well, but the thing that bothers me about this debate, because you alluded to it just now, is that it doesn't have to be. Why does it have to be commercial or NASA? I mean, certainly starting with delivery of cargo to the International Space Station, or the delivery of any cargo to low Earth orbit or geosynchronous orbit or anywhere in space, there's certainly a role for commercial to do it. Commercial's been doing it for years, launching commercial satellites on commercial rockets. And so to have a group like SpaceX come along and find a new way to do it that's less expensive, more streamlined, with reliable hardware, seems to make a lot of sense. But why not put, when you're ready, put humans on top of this thing and let a commercial entity fly them if it's safe to do? I mean, is it a technical issue or is it an economic issue? Wes, what do you think?
Well,
or is it a political issue?
Yeah. Well, coming from the standpoint of a editorial cartoonist that centers on primarily aviation aerospace subjects, I can say that I look at the entire situation and I say, wow, what a great amount of stuff to cartoon on.
Yeah, really.
Because
lots of good material.
It's like you said, you have the two sides. But the reason why we have the two sides is because of the Obama budget proposal. It has proposed that we eliminate NASA's ability to launch astronauts and give it all to the commercial sector. But if you watch the hearings in the Congress, which I've been watching since August, and I was just saying here recently that I study those hearings like the Zapruder films, frame by frame. And what I've seen is that the Congress keeps saying what we need is we need the two to develop in parallel. We need to have a NASA capability for launching astronauts, and we also need to have a commercial capability for launching humans into spaceflight. And I don't see any reason why we can't do that. It's chump change compared to what this country is spending on other things right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolute chump change. There's no reason why we can't give the money that is proposed to the commercial side and have them develop. As a matter of fact, I think we should give them more money to develop.
Right.
And then also have a NASA capability. But that doesn't necessarily mean we have to go with Ares 1 and Constellation exactly as it has been. We can modify it other than destroy it. You don't just take all of this and throw it out in one shot. So I think that whole proposal, that portion of the proposal, is very ill-conceived. And the metaphor I like to use is, well, you had Miles O'Brien on a few weeks ago, and he made this metaphor about the interstate highway system and so on. The metaphor I like to use is, let's say there was a new burger joint in town, mm-hmm. and it was the best. They advertised big, we're the best burger. You went there, and they gave you this big burger, and you looked at that bun, and man, it was just bakery quality, wonderful, huge burger. And it's just, this is it. And well, fresh tomatoes, a fresh lettuce, and you open it up, and right there is a giant cow pie.
Yeah.
Now, would you eat the burger?
Would you?
Because it's 75% of it is really good.
But.
Okay. But there's a part of it, there's a core to it, there's an important part of it that is not. And that's the way I see, that's my metaphor for the Obama budget. I think what we have to do is we have to replace that part with something that works for Congress and works for the American people and the future of this country.
And is that replacement, is that part that's missing, is it hardware or is it vision stuff? You know, I mean,
it's both.
And it is both. You know, they said we're taking away Constellation, and immediately, you know, the reaction is, well, we're shutting down human spaceflight. Well, no, you're not shutting down human spaceflight. You're still doing trips to the space station. There's still opportunities to do other things. But it's the hardware that you're getting rid of.
You're shutting down NASA's capability to do human spaceflight. So you're shutting down the United States government's capability, the United States capability to do its own human spaceflight other than in the commercial area. The commercial will develop fine if we give it the space and give it the time. But right now we don't have the time.
Well, but Brian, you're looking at the other side of this, and of course, you're an engineer by training. You had no social life when we were in college, and okay, it's true, right? but in terms of the money, is it a matter of throwing money at you? I guess what I'm trying to ask is that, you know, the problem that comes the critics. I'm in radio, by the way.
The critics
say, well, there's no market for commercial for manned spaceflight. So how is commercial going to survive if there's no market? But is it a market issue? Is the technical part, quote unquote, easy? And it is the market problem? I mean, how do you guys look at that?
Well, you know, the technical part is definitely achievable. I would never, you know, characterize it as easy.
No, right.
You know,
Or routine.
I mean, the program is committed to safety, and that in itself drives complexity into the hardware, into the processing. So, but just some of the other comments, you know, backing up what Wes was saying, I don't see the two sides as mutually exclusive.
Right.
You know, I see NASA's role in developing, you know, manned space flight to achieve some other goals, as opposed to routine transport of, you know, cargo and crew to station, and just turning over that piece, you know, to a commercial company like SpaceX, you know, through the CRS program and then hopefully COTS-D, you know, will serve the country well. And I think it's a shame that some of the folks who are on the anti-SpaceXers see SpaceX as the reason that Constellation, you know, is being shut down, as opposed to just the economy.
Right. Oh, and I totally agree with that, too. And in fact, you know, what's frustrated me throughout this whole thing, and Pat, maybe you can comment on this too, because you know you and I both have been great space advocates as part of what we do and educate kids and go out there and talk to people. You know, we finally got, even going back to President Bush and the vision for space exploration, whether or not it was backed up with money or not, and that's a whole other history. The point was, we were given this fresh look and almost a sense of fresh money coming, and we were finally going to go out and do something. And now it's kind of been pulled out from under us again. And the people, the Congress doesn't know how to react to that. I mean, what do we need? I guess I'm trying to ask is, what do we need to make this work? What is the right balance for our space program that could get everyone on board with it?
Well, I think it's got to be it does have to be a balance. Like Brian said, there's no way that you can have one or the other. You know, you need to have both. I mean, this country has always operated on that kind of economic model, where the commercial side comes in, and generally they tend to take over industries that the government has spent the R&D funds to develop the technologies that are required, and then commercial comes in and finds better ways to do it in less expensive ways and makes it more efficient. So I think that's the kind of mix we're going to have, and it does make a lot of sense to have your payloads you know, your supplies taken up to the space station commercially. Why should we be spending all this money on extremely expensive shuttle launches when, you know, if you're only taking bulk cargo up, you don't need to have a human component with that to help deliver those things. Yes, the shuttle's been a fabulous delivery vehicle when you're taking up the oversized cargo and you're delivering crew. But for the everyday things, like when Brian's talking about the COTS program of commercial cargo delivery, you don't need to have a highly advanced state-of-the-art vehicle to do that. You can fly big, dumb boosters. Oh, and let me get in my official disclaimer that my opinions don't necessarily represent those of Space Florida, but I am here of my own accord. So
yes. My opinions do represent the opinions of Clyde Morris, cartoon strip.
Brian, you want to give your disclaimer at this point on the record?
Yeah, my opinions don't reflect those of Space Florida.
That's right. My opinions are minus.
See, I get paid for my opinions, gentlemen.
That's right. And some of us just say our opinions, whether we get paid or not. Well, that's great. Well, look, we need to pause at this moment and stop the clocks for our weekly 5-minute built-in hold here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get caught up on all the latest news, weather, and sports from Fox News. And when we return, we'll have more with our one-year anniversary edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky, and you're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. And as always, you're welcome to join in the conversation by dialing 321-768-1240, star 1240 for AT&T wireless customers. Our email address is spacetalking@AOL.com. And you can stay in touch with us when we're off the air through the week by visiting WMMBAM.com, where you can find the Space Talk show page, download a podcast of today's program, and check out some of the other things the station is doing here locally in Brevard County. Well, in the studio with me today for this one-year anniversary show of Space Talk, left to right again on your radio dial. I love saying that, Wes. Isn't that fun? Is Wes Olszewski of Clyde Morris and Dr. Zuch Model Rockets fame. Patrick McCarthy speaking on his own behalf, but during the day, he works for Space Florida. And Brian Mazdell, who's from SpaceX, who also does not speak for Space Florida. Well, on this anniversary edition, with the one-year anniversary coming up, my wife, Dawn, said, you know, you got to do it. You got to do it. You got to do it. I said, okay, I will. For the one-year anniversary, just for you, honey, I'm going to do it. And that was this. From the day one of this radio program, she has, can you say hate? Hated our opening theme song, which is Telstar, by the way. A little ditty from the 60s that just to me just says Cape Canaveral, missile heyday. And it's just a classic, you know, not cliched type space song that's a wonderful opening. And she doesn't like it. And she thought, well, you're never going to, no one's going to listen to you. And nothing's going to ever happen. And so I'm going to take the risk here and change the theme song, at least for the second year. And I went to the guys here and I said, you know, will you help me come up with some ideas? And we kind of shot it around our Starship engineer, Aaron Michaels, thought about it a bit too. And we came up with three possibilities here for new theme songs. And what we're going to do right now, and Aaron, I know you're listening with me here, we're going to play a little 20 to 30 second clip of these three songs. Let's go ahead, Aaron, fire off what you have as track number two. Now listen carefully. Okay, this is the artist Man or Astro Man from the album Deluxe Men in Space. The track is called Super Rocket Rumble. Okay. All right, so that's our first choice. All right, so now go ahead and Aaron, and fire up track number three. Kind of laid back, kind of a Saturday afternoon sound to it. The album is called Cosmopolis, 1988 to 2009, and the artist is Laika and the Cosmonauts. The song is called Floating. Okay, those are two really good ones. Now, just for fun, let's just see what we like about the third one here. which we think we like the best. Here it comes.
How many of you out there on radio land
isn't that
recognize
the best?
That?
We ought to have a contest to see. That is the theme from the movie The Reluctant Astronaut with Don Knotts. Do you remember that one, you guys? Do you remember seeing that one?
Not really.
No, no, see, it's radio. You got to say it out loud. You just can't shake your head.
No, I did not see that one.
Reluctant Astronaut, great with Don Knotts, and shot at the time when the Saturn test vehicle, the 500F vehicle.
It was filmed in 1967.
Filled out
of the pad. 1966, and it came out in the summer of 1967.
Absolutely wonderful, wonderful. I've said for years that if I ever get the fortunate opportunity to fly in space, perhaps on a Dragon or something like that,
Falcon,
commercial,
yep, Dragon.
The night before, I will watch this movie. And so anyway, so there you go. So there's the three. So Wes, what do you think?
Oh boy, Jim, that's a toughie. You know, I sent you that Reluctant Astronaut clip.
Yep.
But I'm afraid that if you played that every day, I think that your audience might not take your show seriously.
Really,
enough.
Really?
Also, you know, it's Vic Mizzi did the recording, and I'm afraid you might be liable for royalties there if you played
it
every day.
I think the station's got that covered in
okay.
terms of
I'm going to vote for the Cosmos one.
Oh, Cosmos! Really, you're scaring me here.
I'll vote for
okay,
that.
Okay, okay. Well, Pat, what do you think?
Oh, I'm all for Laika and the Cosmonauts there, number two. It's got that great 60s surf rock kind of sound, but it's a little bit laid back, like you say, perfect for a Saturday afternoon, and it's semi-serious, and you can't beat the name of the group.
Do I have to actually
Laika
take
and
marks?
The Cosmonauts. Everybody knows who Laika was.
Yes, that's true.
And, of course, the Cosmonauts, a great backing band, so what more could you ask for?
So you two agree. You agree it's the Cosmonauts. It's Lek and the Cosmonauts.
I'm afraid we agreed, Jim.
Oh, God. Brian.
I'm sorry, Jim. I can't back them up on that.
Oh,
it just sounds like there's a loss of guidance in the capsule, and we're just going to float out to some unknown destination. I don't know if that's the theme you really want to give your listeners.
That's a very good point. Now, which one are you going to pick?
I like number one. It's it's got some energy to it. It's got that retro surfer feel to it, and it's... I just like the energy.
It's
going to take us into the future, I think.
We're going to have to get Dawn to get in here.
Yeah, I don't know. She might do the tiebreaker. I don't know. Hey, Aaron, what do you think? We're going to include you on this.
The first two, very Cocoa Beach, very beach 60s, sort of had that feel.
Yeah.
Very early space.
Right.
But I'm kind of leaning towards the Reluctant Astronaut, Don Knotts thing. It's got a nice feel to it.
It's got a nice feel to it, huh? Okay, and the family who's visiting today in the peanut gallery... two of the boys saying number one. Oh,
and so does Dawn.
God.
She's back there.
Is Dawn saying number one
number
too?
Number one as well. Yes.
You see her from there. She's saying number one. Dawn
and
is saying number
me,
one.
Jim, your wife is always right.
Super Rocket Rumble, the album Deluxe Men in Space, Men or Astro Man. Oh, Aaron, I think we got to go with the majority. I mean, I'm all about the Democrat. You know, the Democrats. I'm all about democracy. About the Democrats.
Well, who does the editing around here?
Okay.
The real power.
Well, all right. We just got a little bit of time here, Aaron. All right. So if you can you call up what you got ready for next? What we talked about earlier.
I certainly can. Give me about 10 seconds.
Okay, I'll give you about 10 seconds. So, yeah, assuming that the last one, the Reluctant Astronaut, was going to win, because we kind of thought that maybe we had stacked the cards that way. Aaron had taken the time already to, in fact, he was going to surprise me with this at one point. We said, no, let's hold off and wait till the votes. Here's how the show might have sounded next week at the opening.
Fuel is go, 1.2 G cabin, 14 PSI. Oxygen is go, telemetry is go, all systems go.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new
in
space
been.
Flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Now, is that perfect or what? The way that times in like that?
Perfect. You notice when Don Knotts reads that line? That's exactly Alan Shepard's in-flight boost.
His in-flight thing?
Report
back. Oh, that's
yes.
So funny.
He even gets the pause between the cabin pressure and how many G's there are backwards like Shepard did.
Oh, gee, and then he spins up his peanut butter in the control tape, which is just, it's a great scene.
He doesn't turn into a porpoise in the capsule, does
no,
he?
No, he does turn into Mr.
No,
Lippet.
He doesn't do that.
No. But extra points for you for remembering that. That's a great movie. Incredible Mr. Limpet.
You know, maybe you should take some callers on this before you make a final decision.
Well, I think we got it. You know, Mrs. Mankey, you know, she says it's number one, and you guys, majority rules. So we'll put together something next week with number one, and Aaron, I'll get you the full the clip on that. But one last word on Reluctant Astronaut. It's a great movie because you've got Don Knotts hanging out the side of an Apollo capsule with the countdown less than 10 seconds to go. I mean, it's just, you know, and how he get. I have nightmares over that whole thing. So, anyway, okay, well, happy anniversary to us, and we got a new theme song picked, and thanks for you guys doing that. And so let's get back to some more serious talk, and let's start with a question about Falcon 9 on the line. Carrie from Ogallala. Carrie, welcome to Space Talk. You have a question.
Well, first a comment. I like Telstar better than any of them. But
oh, bless you. Bless you.
Okay. Well, the second one sounds like a dog and pony show. Sorry about that. Which leads me to my question about the Falcon 9.
Yeah.
I understand that it's using the same sort of fuel that the Russians have been using since they launched Gagarin, liquid oxygen and liquid kerosene. Now, was it the success which they've had with it? I know it takes a larger vehicle to use kerosene because you have to have more kerosene than you do liquid hydrogen. Or was it just the economic feasibility using kerosene over having to use the very volatile liquid hydrogen?
Well, any one of us could take that question, but Brian, that's all yours, and I think it's an easy answer.
Yeah, obviously there are certain economies of scale or benefits to having this two stages utilize the same propellants. The first being we have a very similar engine on our second stage, MVAC, that's very similar to the 9 first stage engines on the booster. So we really see, you know, efficiencies there in manufacturing, processing, and then design. It also allows us to use common manufacturing techniques with the first and second stage tanks as well. So we are looking in the future to develop a hydrogen upper stage, but for the Falcon 9, right now we're just taking advantage of the common propellants across the stages.
And in general, kerosene a little easier to handle, easier to deal with in all aspects of the plumbing and propellant scheme.
Absolutely, yeah. There's complexities that come along with, you know, purging hydrogen engines that can be fairly difficult operationally.
Okay, good. Carrie, thanks for the phone call. And by the way, Pat, Mary McCarthy writes on AOL.com. She sends me a note to spacetalking@AOL.com. She said choice number two, but still doesn't beat choice number one.
Well, so I was smart enough to choose the one that my wife liked as well.
That's right. So, hey, we're going to take a final break, wrap up this anniversary edition of Space Talk, and come back for just a couple of last thoughts, all brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Bankey. You're listening to WMMB.
This is Space Talk with Jim Bankey.
And again, welcome back as we begin our final segment of today's first anniversary edition of Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance, as we spend a few more minutes with some of my fellow alumni from Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University, the Harvard of the sky, the best aviation school in all of the world. Didn't get paid for that either. Well, let's talk about what's ahead for each of you. We're going to wrap up a program a little bit here. Wes, new adventures for Clyde Morris. Tell us about your website. Give a plug. Talk about Dr. Zuch. Any new rockets in store?
Well, www.clydemorris.com. That's Clyde with a K.
Mm-hmm.
And Clyde Morris will continue to annoy and offend and make other people giggle. We'll be going after the top dogs in aviation and aerospace, including your boss, Elon, because I have a feeling that comment he made that this launch bodes well for the Obama budget could come back to haunt him if the rest of the launches don't go as spectacularly.
And we'll see.
So Dr. Zuch Rockets is taking off, literally, and the money's coming in. The rockets are going out, and I've got some new kits releasing, and looking at making a Falcon 9 is have to figure out a way to do it without getting sued by Elon Musk.
Yep.
So he has better lawyers than I have.
Yeah, really. Did you copyright the design? I know that's always been a problem with Boeing and Delta.
Yes, they sue for royalties. So we have to avoid those things. But like I said, the companies are going well. My next Great Lakes book is due in October. So number 14, and we're not
really
here to talk about
already.
Great Lakes.
No.
We're here to talk about space.
No, that's right.
But, and I don't write about space because there's way too many know-it-alls on the armchairs of this planet when it comes to space
flight.
That's
absolutely right. And by the way, you can if you're local here and you want to get a Dr. Zuch model rocket, you're going to be able to get one at the Air Force Space and Missile Museum where we sell Explorer 1 rockets.
Actually, no, it is the Juno 1.
The Juno, the Jupiter.
The Juno 1.
Spend another 20 minutes talking about
exclusive
that.
Exclusive to the museum.
Well, that is true, so... Pat McCarthy, what's going on with you? You're going to off to model rocket meets and matches and kids, and what's going on?
Yep, the next Nationals taking place out in Colorado in August, and my teammates and I are getting ready for that. Be flying an entire week of model rocketry nonsense out there, so it's always fun. On a serious side, back at work, we're pushing pretty hard. We got great support from the legislature and the governor this year.
Really did.
And a lot of financing available to go out and beat the bushes for more business development and do things. Going to be bringing in some new companies to the state and to the area because you have to realize we're not going to get 5,000 or 7,000 jobs to replace the ones that are going away with shuttle. We're not going to get that from one company coming in here. It's going to be a group of a lot of smaller companies, the technology development types, the payload processing companies, the launch vehicle manufacturers. They're all going to be, you know, in tens and 50s and hundreds. You're not going to get thousands of jobs, and people have to realize that. But we are going to be working very hard to bring in a lot of the smaller companies to pick up the slack. And companies like SpaceX are going to be doing a great job of increasing their workforce here because they're going to be doing a lot more launches.
Right.
They just signed that huge contract with Iridium to launch satellites.
Congratulations to them, too.
Now, even though they're going out of Vandenberg because of the inclination requirements, I mean, that means they're going to have a bigger production rate, and they're going to be making more rockets available to fly from here as well. So, you know, a rising tide lifts all boats. So, any of that, we need to get that back here. The U.S. has lost. We used to be 80% of the commercial launch market, and now we're down somewhere in the teens.
Yeah.
So, it's... something we have to work hard to overcome and get it back from the Russians and the Chinese and the Indians and you know, the Brazilians are coming up. So there's a lot of people that are chipping away at what used to be our dominant commercial market, and we need to get that back.
Well, that's great. And you know, I'll add this comment too. You know, more than anything else, I mean, all the talk about where we might go and how we might get there and all that, we still need to figure out the best way to get into low Earth orbit for low cost. If we can get that cost per pound down to the point where it becomes where you can make a business case for doing all sorts of neat things that we can do in space, you know, we're not there yet. But you know what? I think that's what's exciting about SpaceX and Falcon 9 is that for once, finally, after 50, 60 years of launch operations, we've got a hint that it is possible that you can lower the cost. There is a different way of doing business and still get safely to orbit, and Falcon 9 proved that. That was a huge day for history. And Brian, again, I mean, I'm just you know, amazed at what you've been able to accomplish, you and your team. Talk about what is next for you guys. I guess you're only as good as your last launch, but
right, as Wes was kind enough to point out. But no, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we do have a full manifest going forward to deliver on our COTS missions to demonstrate, you know, reliability and safety of the Falcon 9 and Dragon vehicles. And then we move right into CRS launches for the commercial resupply of the station. So got a full work slate ahead of me. But as I do that, you know, I look forward to working with teams like Space Florida with Pat, you know, to pull together workforce here and hopefully, you know, take advantage of some of the talent that's already at the Space Center here to help us with our mission, you know, as we continue to grow.
Well, that's great. And we want to continue to help tell your story, too. So, you know, Brian, it was great to have you come into the studio and chat. And let's do some more of this as we have great things to talk about with you. And all of you, Pat, Wes, thank you so much for being on the show today and celebrating this anniversary. And it's good after all these years to get together every once in a while and rehash. We didn't even get into old time stories. We talked about space policy the whole hour. But boy, there's a lot of stories to share that that might be interesting to some and might just not be interesting to anybody.
Well, but, and there's some we probably shouldn't share.
That's exactly right.
So. I know a few Miles Dell stories.
Well, did you say something about him owing you money?
No. I'm the only one in the Avion staff that was a non-drinker, so I was always sober during the parties. Thus, I remembered everything.
You remembered everything. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to ask. I thought this was going to be like the Avion. Where's the beer and pizza?
Yeah, really.
Okay, no, now let's time, wrap though. It up, shall we?
Oh, come on.
Well, we do need to wrap it up. A quick reminder that the next launch from the Cape is targeted for July 30th. That's not June, by the way. That's July 30th, so we've got a little bit to go. An Atlas V rocket is set to fly from Complex 41. United Launch Alliance, together with the Air Force, is scheduled to launch the first advanced, extremely high-frequency military communications satellite. If the mission sticks to that date, the launch time will be 8:05 in the morning Eastern Time. And let's see. And as we kick off a second year of Space Talk next week here on WMMB, my guest will be Charlie Mars, a retired NASA engineer from the Kennedy Space Center. Charlie is a well-known person within the local space community and is the driving force behind the Space Walk of Fame and Museum in Titusville, and he never quits. He's probably the busiest retired guy you'll ever meet, and we'll talk about what Charlie and his friends are doing to preserve space history and to share it with others, and I'm sure that he'll have a few interesting stories to tell along the way. Charlie, a Lifetime Achievement Award winner with the National Space Club Florida Committee, and again, just a colorful character. You will not want to miss this conversation with Charlie Mars next week on Space Talk. Well, I guess that's it for today. Again, thanks for listening on this one-year anniversary. Don't forget to stay in touch with us throughout the week on WMMBAM.com. Use the keywords Space Talk to jump directly to our page, and you'll get all the latest updates and how to find us on Twitter, how to send us email, and what's going on, links to past episodes of the show and things we've talked about in the past as well. Space Talk is sponsored, by the way, by United Space Alliance and is a production of Mylas Solutions. Aaron Michaels is my personal chief engineer for the show. I'm Jim Banky, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Now, don't go anywhere. The Home Mortgage Law Show is next, followed by Dan Connery, live and local at 4 p.m. right here on WMMB. See you next week.